Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome. You're listening to the Change Agent's Dilemma for Tuesday, February 19th, 2013. I'm your host, Heather Stagel, coming to you live from Atlanta, Georgia, as I do once a month on Blog Talk Radio. This show is one of the many ways I help equip individuals to lead organizational change at Enclaria. The Change Agent's Dilemma is how to influence change without authority, and my goal with this show is to provide ideas and share stories to help you do just that. Today, my guest is Shari Harley, who is here to share practical tips from her new book, How to Say Anything to Anyone. Shari runs Candid Culture, an international training and consulting firm bringing candor back to the workplace, making it safe to tell the truth at work. Before launching her business, Shari led leadership development training for Oppenheimer Funds, conducted customer service training for American Century Investments, and facilitated for Dale Carnegie training. Shari speaks at conferences and does training and consulting with organizations throughout the U.S. and spent much of the last year speaking and training in India, Singapore, Thailand, Malaysia, Dubai, and Australia, where she unfortunately shopped her way through each country. Some of her clients include Blue Cross and Blue Shield, Delta Dental, the Wyoming Department of Public Health, IBM, DirecTV, and the University of Colorado, and many others. Shari is the author of the book, How to Say Anything to Anyone. She has a master's degree in communication and taught leadership development at the University of Denver. Shari lives in Colorado because it is never humid there. Shari, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Heather.
I can relate with the humidity being in Atlanta. It's definitely oppressive. So.
Yeah, I couldn't do it. You're a better woman.
I can affirm that choice. So you've got a great new book called How to Say Anything to Anyone, and, you know, it's one of those things where you posted something about it on Twitter. It was retweeted. I happened to see it in my feed and instantly went and downloaded it because it just looked like such a great book, great topic. And, you know, about a chapter or two in, I thought, I need this person on my show. So thanks so much for being here.
Well, that's great feedback. Thank you. I'm so glad you enjoyed the book.
So let's just talk about why is it necessary to be able to say anything to anyone at work?
Yeah.
Or in general.
You know, it's really, this topic is fascinating to me, and I spent my whole career, you know, working around this and researching it. And how I got started doing this, I was running training for a large mutual fund company, and we did a lot of management training, tons of it, you know, and really, I thought, really good stuff. I went out and I bought the best stuff on the market. And the managers who'd had the most training were the worst communicators. And I was the management coach. And people would come to me and they'd say, you know, I get no feedback at work. I don't know where I stand. You know, I apply for promotions. I don't get them. I don't know why. You know, like that. And I just got really, really frustrated, to be honest. And I started to wonder, like, what am I doing here? Like, I think I'm wasting my time and my career. And so I started creating all these tools to help people be more comfortable telling the truth at work. And I work with lots of organizations around the world, and I hear the same thing over and over and over and over, and it's this. We can't tell the truth here without retaliation. Or if I tell the truth, I'll get marginalized, or I'll get fired, or I'll be on the list, right? And I honestly just don't think that's true. I just don't buy it. So I'm on this quest to help people create relationships at work where they can tell the truth with less fear, because I think it's possible. Like, I tried to get fired and laid off from every job I ever had. I was always the really honest person. I was always the one who would tell you what was really happening, and I never got fired, and I was trying to get fired. So I just don't think it's true.
That's great. So the people who are listening to this show are people who are trying to implement change from within their organizations. And so from that standpoint, how does that relate, organizational change and speaking up at work?
Here's what I really think about speaking up at work, and especially if you're in a position of, with a lack of formal authority, right? So when you're not running a department or you're not the COO or the CEO or a director, you know, it really is all dependent on your relationships. of whether or not you have a voice in an organization and you can make any change. And I really think you can get lots and lots done without a title. You don't need that. But I'll give people my method. So my first method is to, number one, no matter what role you have in a company, you have to see yourself as a salesperson. And that makes most people physically ill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because we have this, you know, salespeople have this dilemma or this stigma, right? Like they're pushy and they only care about themselves and they wear bad clothes. And in an organization, you are always selling yourself and your department, and no one has to work with you. I mean, we all know that we work around the people we don't like. You know, we don't like the answer we get from purchasing. We do what we want. So people don't have to work with you. So the first thing is think of yourself as someone who's in sales and treat your internal customers as customers. And here's a technique for people. Number one, identify who your key customers are. You only have so much time and energy. And the work I do and all the work that's smattered throughout How to Say Anything to Anyone and the suggestions and the tips are all around nurturing and strengthening business relationships. But you can and shouldn't do these things with everyone. You don't have time. So number one, and if you're listening today, I would just grab a pen and just write down, who are the five people or departments you work with internally who are most important to you? These are your most important customers. And my definition of a customer is anyone you need to get your job done and anyone who needs you to get their job done. So if the relationship isn't good, it's problematic. So you identify those five people. And then the next step is literally to go see them and use these words, and I'm taking this straight out of the book. I want a good relationship with you. If we work together long enough, I'm going to screw it up because I'm human. And I'm going to say things I wish I hadn't said, and I'm going to take too long to get back to you, or I'm going to give you wrong information. Not because I want to, but just because that's what happens. I want the kind of relationship where we can just talk about those things. And it's not a big deal. I really want your feedback. And I promise no matter what you say to me, I will say thank you. Heather, I think that's how people should start their relationships, and I don't know anybody who does. So that's the first step.
Right. That's great. You know, something that popped into my head as you were saying that is that so often it's the little things that tweak people wrong and that sort of mess up relationships. It's not so much, I mean, sometimes it's the big things, but often it's just little things over time that can happen that aren't talked about. So I think that's important.
I think that the people we work with and everyone in our life, really, because all of this stuff and everything that's in the book really translate to business and personal relationships. I think people have been trained not to tell us the truth. Like, Heather, I'm going to start a sentence and finish it, okay?
Okay.
If you have nothing nice to say,
don't say it at all.
Yeah, don't say anything at all. Now, who taught you that?
My mother.
Yeah, right? Our mom. So this is all our mother's fault. No, I'm telling you,
right.
I'm sort of kidding, but not really, right? Like, we've been trained, if you have nothing nice to say, don't say anything. And the other problem is, you know, when people get to work, it's not like they're 5 years old, right? We're 25, we're 30, we're 35, we're 40. And we've already given people bad news in the past. Like, we've told the truth, as we saw it, people didn't like it, and the person got upset, and we got the smackdown. And it doesn't take long to really learn that it's not safe to tell people the truth, so we stop speaking up. That's where the meeting after the meeting comes from in the workplace, which women know we have in the bathroom, right? Like you go to a meeting where some stupid policy is announced. You're like, yeah, I am so not doing that. And this is a flavor of the week company. And if we wait long enough, you know, this will go away. And we're asked for our opinion. We tell whoever's running the meeting we think it's an awesome idea. Deep down, we think it's dumb. And we talk about it to our girlfriends in the bathroom later. But that's only because the person running the meeting hasn't created an environment where it's safe to tell the truth. So the next step, after saying to someone, I want a good relationship, if we work together long enough, I'm going to screw it up, et cetera, I want your feedback, please say thank you, or I promise I'll say thank you. The next step, and this is also in How to Say Anything to Anyone in the book, is to say, I don't want to have to guess how to work with you. Can I ask you a couple of questions? And Heather, you read the book, so you know the book has questions throughout, and it's really basic, simple things that we don't typically ask people. Things like, how often do you want to meet with me? Do you want to meet in person or over the phone? How much data do you want about the work we do together? Do you want details or do you want big picture? Do you want paragraphs or bullets? What will you actually read? If I need to reach you, what's the best way to do it? Are you a cell person? Are you an email person? Can I text you? what could I do that would annoy you and I wouldn't even know it? So my theory on asking these extraordinarily basic questions is people are not us. They don't do things the way we do, even when we think they should, right? So then we violate someone's expectations, but we didn't know they were their expectations because they didn't tell us. Then they're upset, but they can't tell us because it's too awkward, so they tell someone else, and then the relationship's damaged. So it's a really simple method, but I have found that it works, and people appreciate being asked.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I think one of my favorite questions in the book is just, what are your pet peeves? You know, what am I going to do that would annoy you?
Isn't that fun? I love that question.
I wish people would ask me that.
Right? Because we all have them. It's almost like, you know, here's the weird thing at work. It's almost like it's not okay to have a pet peeve. Like, it's not okay to have a preference. So it's like we suffer in silence, right? Like that person who always has a posse of people at their cubicle. And you're like, seriously? I am trying to work. Or the person who takes all their conference calls from CubeLand on a speakerphone and you just want to kill them. Right? I mean, these are the
right.
things that make the workplace, like, horrific. Like, I remember when I managed training for Oppenheimer Funds, I was a manager, and managers didn't get offices. Until you were an assistant vice president, you didn't get an office. And I was in CubeLand, which was, of course, gray, right? And I was in the training department, and there are all these cubes. And I'm super distracted by noise. And I couldn't function. I literally sat in a utility closet for 2 years. It was like me, some brooms, my cell phone, and a laptop. Because I couldn't say to my coworkers, you guys need to shut up. So the pet peeve question, when we do training with in-tech groups, like I'll go in and do training with an organization or an association, I will actually have people share their pet peeves and people write them down for other people. And it's like, listen, that person gets really annoyed when you put the coffee pot back with, like, nothing in it. Stop doing it. So it actually, you know, I just find that this kind of stuff opens up the lines of communication, and it doesn't have to be so hard to tell the truth. And your whole organization is about change and making change when you don't have a position of formal authority. You can do all of this stuff without a title, right? You go to your boss and your coworkers, and you say, listen, I want to be really easy to work with. Now, can I ask you a couple questions that would make that, you know, could make that happen? How do you want to get data from me? What are the things that I do that annoy you and I don't even know? And can I touch base again next quarter and ask these same questions again?
I was going to add, I'm a big proponent, especially of the relationship between the person who I call the change agent, the person who doesn't have authority but they're responsible for making change happen, and someone else who's in a leadership position who has more direct authority, more ability to get things done in a different department, let's say. And really focusing on that relationship and who has what role in that relationship. And so something, a conversation like that would really help to delineate that relationship and the roles and how that leader and how you as a change agent are going to work together.
Mm-hmm. You know, I used to, the questions in the book, I call them candor questions, and we have a variety of them. We actually have boxes and boxes of candor questions on our website. But I used to call them contracting questions, kind of like what you're talking about,
mm-hmm.
that every relationship is a contract, right? Like, you know, even the person you live with, the person you're married to, your children, you know, there's an agreement of how we're going to work together. But it's not always overt, right? Like, we don't always sit down and say, I'm going to do this and you're going to do this. And if
right.
it doesn't go well, we're going to talk about it. You know, and I think it's just assumed that it's all going to go well. And then it doesn't go well because that's how things go, and then no one can talk about it, and then we just want to give up and quit or get fired or whatever.
Absolutely.
You know, it's really interesting to me. The most frequent training request we get at our company, Candid Culture, which is the name of our business, is, hey, our people, you know, we're not candid here, and can you help us be candid, and can you come give feedback training? And my answer to them is always the same, and it's eventually. I never start anything with feedback training because it's not the steps people are missing, right? Like people
right.
sit in meetings and they practice what they want to say. They're like, oh, man, this guy's such an idiot, right? Like I would say this and I would say that and then I would say this. But they're not gonna because they don't have the permission. So where I start any training we do is the thing we just covered on the phone is, hey, I want a good relationship. Can I get, you know, can I ask for feedback? Can I say thank you? You all say thank you. Here are some questions. Then you can teach people to say hard things. But until then, there's no opening to do it, right? It's like, let's say, like, someone gives you a gift, and you think, dang, why did they think I wanted a rotating picture frame? You know, and you asked for an iPod, but you can't say anything because they never said, if you don't like it, let me know and I will return it because I want you to have something you want. So then we suffer and we put it in the regifting category in the morgue, waiting for some other unsuspecting person's birthday we don't really like. Sorry, that's a total aside.
Oh, that's so funny. but so true, right?
So true.
One of the things that I like to say is that the person or the people that you need to have a conversation with the most are the people you have imaginary conversations in your head with. You know,
totally
if you
true.
Are having a conversation like, I'm going to talk to this person and this is what I'm going to say when I have the chance, but you never give yourself that chance, you know.
Yeah. Well, people are, you know, it's really interesting, right? Like, what's the worst thing that can happen? So let's say you go into the head of IT's office. And you say, listen, I know that we're looking at doing a huge installation, you know, with SAP or some other Oracle-type product, and it's going to be really expensive, and you have a lot of people working on it. And I'm just not sure we're going down the right path. And I'm wondering if you would be willing to talk to me about that or who would be the appropriate person to talk to, because I have a couple of ideas. Like, what is the worst thing that's going to happen? Now, I think some of us think, well, you know, I'll get fired, or I'll get in trouble, or I'll be seen as a naysayer. It's not what you say, it's how. And what I always tell my clients is do not walk into the head of a department or your boss or anyone for that matter and drop a problem at their feet. And I think it's really, really common, and it's a huge mistake in the workplace. So for everyone listening, like if you're going to take anything from this call, here's one like big tip, and I think it could be really career-altering. The people you work with are busy, 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 as you are. They are busier or as busy. When we walk in and say, this is broken, or this doesn't work, or this is a problem, and then we walk out, we just made their lives harder, not easier, and they don't have time. So if you want to get something changed in your organization, come with a solution and make it really easy to say yes. So, for example, let's say you think that how you implement software is not working. Come with what's not working, a minor suggestion, and then a pilot approach. So meaning this, if you have 27 locations around the country, try piloting something small in 4 locations. Because big leaders, big-time leaders can be somewhat, not change-averse, but people are watching and change is expensive. So try something small in a few locations where you know you can win, track the results really, really closely, and then advertise the heck out of it, and then you'll get support to do it in more locations. But the biggest thing is bring a solution. So you go into someone's office and you say, listen, regarding this SAP thing, you know, this one module that has been problematic, I think there's another way to get that done. I did some research. Here's what I propose. Would you be willing to let me do a presentation on it? That brings a solution, not a problem, because a problem just has you be seen as someone who's always dumping problems. That will get you a negative reputation. So, yeah, that's true, right? Like if you're the person who's always like, this is wrong, this is broken, with no problem, and you're like, well, she told me I could tell the truth, and I'm telling the truth, so what's the problem? Yeah,
right.
Your pain is the problem.
So true. So, okay, you said that you talk about the first 2 steps.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any others before
mm-hmm.
the ability to give feedback?
Yeah, so it's a sequence, right? So you ask people basic questions first. You know, like, are you a morning or night person? If I need to find something in your office when you're not there, is that okay? Because that's, you know, annoying to some people. Like, you know, there are some executives who are like, do not walk into my office when I'm not there. So you ask those basic questions, you know, how often do you want to meet, all that good stuff. Then you find out more about their business. So this concept of being a salesperson, so here's where I got that approach, because I know I made some people physically ill when I said that. I started my career with Dale Carnegie training. I was 25 years old. I was a straight commission salesperson. I didn't know anything about sales, right? Like, I was fresh out of school. And I was selling training to big companies, and then I would teach the courses I sold. So everyone was a customer, and if I didn't sell something, I didn't get paid, right? Well, when I went internal to Oppenheimer Funds, which was my second internal job, meaning, you know, I wasn't an external consultant, I was internal, I never knew that I was no longer in sales. And I know that sounds really crazy. Like, I just didn't know that, right? I figured, well, okay, I started in sales, I'm in sales. I got to Oppenheimer, and my boss had quit. I didn't know that. I went to work for this woman I really, really liked. And when I got there, I found out she had resigned. So as I'm moving in with all my boxes, you know, I'm super excited. It's my first day. She's moving out, equally excited, you know, waving at me like, good luck here. And so I don't recommend taking a job for the boss, by the way. I know we have all done that, or some of us have done that. Don't do that. Managers change. I don't recommend taking or leaving a job for the manager because those things change. If you have a boss you don't like, chances are that will work itself out and kind of hang in there. Anyway, so I get to Oppenheimer, and I was the training manager, right? So I call the department heads I'm supposed to be servicing and supporting. I said, hi, you know, I left voicemails. I'm the new training manager, and I'm really looking forward to meeting you, and I'd love to come meet you and learn more about your department, you know, and see what I can do for you. And out of the 10 people who were supposed to be working with me, only two called me back. Two. So I went and I met with them, and I said, listen, I'm not here to talk about training or myself. I'm here to learn more about your organization. Can I ask you a couple of questions? Which is a straight technique out of sales training, right? You talk very little. You ask a lot of questions. So I just ask questions, and this is the next step, Heather. So the next step in the series of questions goes like this, and if you're taking notes, write these down. They're also in the book. And it sounds something like this. Tell me about your business. What are you working on this year? What are your 1, 3, and 5-year goals? What keeps you up at night? What are you worried about? And then you learn more about their business, and you say, hey, could I come to one of your team meetings and just observe? And you still haven't said anything about yourself or your own department. And then you come to a team meeting, and you say, hey, you know, at your next meeting, could I do a short presentation on the work we do and how we could service your department? And over time, you build the relationship, and you earn their business. So at Oppenheimer, I practiced that with those two people who were willing to see me. And then eventually one of them said, you know, I got these two people who can't get along. Could you barter that for me? Like, could you help do a mediation? And I said, sure, I could do that. So I did that, and that went well. And then he said, you know, we have our team retreat coming up. Could you facilitate our offsite retreat? And I said, yeah, I could do that. And then I did that, and that went well. And then the guy actually referred me. So, you know, when one of his coworkers or one of his fellow leaders called with a problem, they said, you know, that new training person's not so bad. Like, you should talk to her. And after 2 years, 10 of the people who were supposed to be working with me were working with me. But it took 2 years.
Yeah.
And I didn't go to my boss talking about change and say, you know, so-and-so won't call me back. They won't work with me. I didn't do that. Because he'd be like, that's nice. I'm busy. Go form the relationship. If they don't want to work with you, it's because you haven't earned the right. So I had to earn their business, right? People work with the people they want to. They work around and against the people they don't. So for all of you on the phone, I want people working with you because they want to, not because someone told them to. So you go and you say, here's the sequence. I want a good relationship. If we work together long enough, I'm going to screw it up. I periodically want to check in and ask for feedback. I really request you tell me the truth. I promise no matter how hard it is to hear, I'm going to say thank you, and I would love to be able to do the same with you. Now, can I ask you a couple questions so I don't have to guess how to work with you? And then you ask those basic, you know, working style preference questions. Then you ask more about their working, you know, their office and their business and their goals. And then you do some work for them. So that's the next step. So you say, listen, we're working on this project together. Let's get together. Let's talk about it. And then you visit them once you've done some work, and you say, can I ask for some feedback on how things are going? Now, the question, how are things going, is not a question. It's a greeting. You know, when you see someone on the street or in the hallway at work and you're like, hey, how's it going? And they're like, well, my wife left me and my cat died and my mother's sick. And you're like, okay, I really wasn't asking. I was just being polite. How's it going is not a question. So you can start with how's it going. And then you say something like, our teams met together last month. What worked about that meeting? What could be improved? So the last step in the process is really, well, not the last, but the next to last is to ask for feedback and really mean it. Or something like, we've been working on the marketing in your department. Tell me what you like about the marketing and tell me what's not working. So ask a specific question. If you ask a vague question, you're going to get a vague answer.
Right.
You ask a specific question, and then you have to circle back to the person. You cannot ask for feedback, excuse me, and be a black hole. You know how, like, in meetings or at work, people who are committed to change and project managers will love this. So you know how, like, we're asked for our opinion, and then senior leaders go, well, actually, the decision's already made, but thanks. You know, or, yeah, we're not going to go with that, but thanks for the communication. You know, that feels like a game, and then people don't want to participate with you because they feel like it's a perfunctory exercise and they're wasting their time. So if you ask your coworkers, your colleagues, your customers for feedback, you don't have to take their feedback, but you have to go back to them. Say, listen, here's what we heard you say. We're actually not going to do that, and let me tell you why. People, they don't need their ideas taken, but they want to know that it was considered and it was heard.
Right.
Okay, so there's that step. And then you do a little more work, and you periodically check in, and I call it a relationship inventory. So you just check in once, let's say once a quarter, twice a year, maybe once a month, but it depends how often you work together. And you just say, how is this working? What's working? What's not working? How have we exceeded your expectations? How have we disappointed you? And then you have to say thank you for the feedback.
Great.
Do you want to talk about why people need to say thank you and how hard that is? Like, would that be useful for people?
Quickly, because we have about 5 minutes left in our half hour.
Okay, we can talk about something else. Do you have another question?
Well, I was wondering if you have any tips for giving feedback to other people.
Yeah.
So you've talked so far about getting feedback and the
yeah.
building relationship, but you know, at what point can you give people feedback, and what tips do you have for doing that?
Yeah, great question. Thank you. So if you're really interested in this, there are 3 chapters in the book on feedback, and I get very specific, and I even have videos online of how to have hard conversations, but let me go through it now. So I believe do all the steps we've talked about, right? And now if there's time, if you need to have a hard conversation, absolutely have it. And feedback can be delivered, all feedback. You can say anything you want in 2 minutes or less, I promise you. And when I teach giving feedback, I give people only 2 minutes, and we will resolve any situation in 2 minutes, and here's what it sounds like. Step one, you ask if it's a good time to have a conversation. So you just open it up, and you say, hey, I need to talk to you. Is now a good time? Step two, it starts with the words, I've noticed. Hey, I've noticed that in meetings, you're often on your phone, or you're not present, or you're doing other work. Step three, state the impact of that behavior. You know, that makes it look like you're disinterested and you're not really committed, and I wonder, you know, how interested you are in this project, and I don't want to be doubting that. Step four, you stop talking and ask the person for their point of view. So most feedback, one person talks, you know, the other person pretends to listen while secretly killing you off, and then they leave, and then they tell everyone what a jerk you are because you were mean to them. So you let the person talk, and they go, well, you know, listen, I don't really know why I have to go to these meetings. Like, my boss asked me to go, but we don't really talk about anything relevant to me. And I have to admit, it feels like kind of a waste of time, so I just kind of entertain myself. If they're willing to be that straight, now you can have a real conversation, right? Then it goes to step five, where you make a request. Okay, can I make a request? So here's the thing. If you're going to come to the meeting, be engaged in the meeting. But if you want out, then let's get you out of those meetings. Step six, you make an agreement of, you know, does that work for you? So don't assume that just because you make a request, someone will do it. Mm-hmm. And the last step is, thank you for having this conversation with me. I know it was difficult. I appreciate it. So I always wrap these conversations up with a little bow and say thank you. So a little debrief on that. Do we have time, Heather?
Go ahead.
Okay. So here's the thing with feedback. Do not start with, it's come to my attention or I've become aware. That will freak people out. They will stop listening, and all they can hear is someone ratted on me, and who was it? So all feedback starts with, I've noticed. If someone has told you and you haven't noticed, then you need to go out and notice. Mm-hmm. I've noticed. And you just state the facts. No emotion, just the facts. Then the impact is super important. It's like the so what, why does it matter? You know, you're checked out in meetings. It's impacting your credibility. That's the most important part with feedback. We kind of dance around it, and then we're vague. And people leave, and they go, what are they talking about? So you can't say to someone, you've been inappropriate in these meetings. That is garbage. I call that Captain Crunch. You want to say you're side-talking and you're on your phone. Give people something specific to do differently, because if they knew what to do, they would do it. I can keep going about this if you want. I just want
to know. There's such great advice here. And, well, I guess here's what we'll leave people with, because you, I know you have so much more to say and talk about because it's all in the book.
True.
And so what I would recommend that everyone do, this is an honest recommendation. I've read the book. I think it's great. It's very concise, clear, it's funny. Just a great read and useful tips, as you've heard on the show. The book is called How to Say Anything to Anyone. And Shari, you want to tell everybody where they can find out more about it?
Sure. So, How to Say Anything to Anyone, A Guide to Building Business Relationships That Really Work. You can find it in Barnes & Noble, Amazon. It's also on our website. We will send you a signed copy if you order it from us. But I also want to invite people. We send out a weekly tip, just super short, something short and pithy. We do them every Monday. If you guys want those tips, we send them to our clients, but we'll offer them to you. You can just go to our website, candidculture.com, and sign up, and we'll start sending you the tips. They're fun, and most people just laugh, really. So it's candidculture.com. You can find out all about our training and our book and all that good stuff, and I'd love to see you there. And Heather, thank you so much. This has been a blast to be with you. And
thank you for being
great
here.
Work.
I appreciate it.
My pleasure. You're doing great work in the world. And, you know, for everyone who's been kind of scared to speak up at work, just ask more and assume less and know that things will go well.
Great advice. Thanks, Shari.
Thank you, Heather. Have a great day.
Thanks. And thank you for listening to The Change Agent's Dilemma. If you'd like to be notified of future episodes and other resources to help you influence change in your organization, I invite you to sign up for my monthly newsletter at inclaria.com. Not only will you receive helpful tips, but when you subscribe, you will also receive a free chapter from my change management toolkit, The Irresistible Change Guide. Until next time, take care and best wishes for your change initiative.
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
Using an overpriced trash bag.
Pricey, pricey, pricey!
A bag that breaks.
Whippy, whippy, whippy!
Or a smelly bag.
Stinky, stinky, stinky!
Time to switch to Hefty Ultra Strong trash bags, always at an ultra low price.
Hefty, hefty, hefty!
They're our best bags yet, and they cost less than Glad ForceFlex were sold head to head. So you'll be
happy, happy, happy!
Hefty Ultra Strong with Arm & Hammer Odor Control. Available at Sam's Club.
Hefty, hefty, hefty! Yeah.